This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. We'll check in with reporters here in Northwest Indiana who have filed stories in print and online. And one of them who's done a lot of stories in the last few days ahead of the 2020 elections were held this week is Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. And Dan, thank you for spending some of your very, very valuable time. Besides writing all these stories and getting all these phone calls, you've had time to talk with us, and we do appreciate it. Thank you.
Happy to be here anytime.
Well, one of the stories that you have out there, of course, all related to the elections, is the not surprising victory that Governor Eric Holcomb had, getting another term of office. Tell us about the story that you had with that.
Yeah, like you said, Governor Holcomb, Republican, is going to win another 4 years, serve another 4 years as Indiana's governor. In the end, the race actually wasn't very close at all. Mm-hmm. Holcomb significantly outpaced Democratic Dr. Woody Myers, and then probably the surprise of the night was the Libertarian candidate pulling in 12% of the vote, more or less, as the numbers get finalized. But that was more than double any recent third-party candidate in Indiana gubernatorial history. So that was an interesting tidbit, the sort of mask backlash, COVID restriction backlash coming from Libertarian Donald Rainwater. But, you know, in the end, Hoosiers decided to stick with the governor they knew, and Eric Holcomb's going to be around through 2024.
Mm-hmm. Of course, with governor candidate Woody Myers was, of course, a former Northwest Indiana state lawmaker, Linda Lawson, and it was a rather emotional night for her, I understand, in the concession speech.
Yeah. She retired from the General Assembly a couple of years ago after serving 20 years as the state representative from Hammond. She actually left Hammond, moved to Brown County, was sort of living out her retirement dream and in the woods in south of Indianapolis. And Woody Myers reached out to her when he was looking for lieutenant governor and convinced her that he was going to do some pretty great things as governor, and he wanted her along for the ride. She agreed to campaign with him. She basically traveled the state for the last 6 months. She talked a lot about, you know, visiting, you know, small towns, all these little places. Said last night, I'm telling you, we've got a great Hoosier land. This is a place we need to be proud of and a place we need to work for every single day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that resonated with a lot of people. She also pointed out that she believes that Myers and Lawson would have been a better result than Holcomb and Crouch, but obviously, you wouldn't expect her to think anything else.
That's right. And it's important to make a note about Donald Rainwater, who's the Libertarian nominee. He may not have gotten enough votes to be even close to being elected, but he is probably going to make a mark on Indiana politics, I'm sure, by just the fact that he's done as well as he did from that one election. It's not often that a Libertarian picks up as many votes in the total, is it?
Right. And a lot of Republicans were pretty explicit about crossing over from Holcomb to Rainwater. There was a talk radio host in Indianapolis that was behind a lot of the Rainwater surge. So a lot of the Rainwater votes in those suburban Indianapolis donut counties where you typically find a lot of Republican votes. And, you know, they seem to be fed up with the mask mandates and other COVID restrictions, and they expressed their displeasure at the governor by voting for Donald Rainwater. What'll be interesting will be whether or not the Libertarian Party builds on this and actually builds a party. You know, if they've got 12% of the vote and the Democrat has 30%, these numbers aren't finalized yet, but, you know, you're halfway to the Democratic Party, and that's been in business for 200 years. So Do they start running more serious candidates for state legislative races and congressional races and, you know, build the local apparatus you need to run a legitimate statewide candidate for governor and possibly have a chance of winning?
And one of the other stories that you had in print and online that's out there in the Times to check out as a result of the election this week is, of course, that of the fact that North Township trustee Frank Mervan has gotten another job, this time a bigger job. He gets to go to Washington. It's like Mr. Smith almost. Maybe we should say Mr. Van, I guess.
Mr. Van, indeed.
As to be sure here, that was quite an interesting event, not a surprise to be sure, because the expanse of Democrats in Northwest Indiana, but the fact that he had a bit more of race this time around than probably that his predecessor or soon to be predecessor, Pete Visclosky had. That is to say, a Republican candidate was in the race this time around. Tell us more about how this thing turned out.
Yeah, it's not too terribly surprising. New candidates almost always get their lowest vote total in their first election. And, you know, this was Mervan's first race in the first congressional district. The numbers right now show him getting about more than 60% of the vote in Lake County, which is the bulk of the population in the district. So any congressman with 60% of the vote generally is considered safe to be running in a safe seat. They're probably not going to be dislodged in future elections, and I think we can expect Mervan will only grow his majority, assuming he doesn't do anything stupid, in subsequent elections. Mark Leyva is well known in the region. This is his eighth time as the Republican nominee for this office, which I think probably has to be some kind of record that you keep running for the same office, keeps losing. But, you know, that builds name recognition, and he embraced a lot of the same sort of Trump and libertarian anti-masker kind of stuff that, you know, proved a little bit popular. I mean, he ran behind Holcomb. He ran well behind. He ran behind Holcomb and Trump in Lake County. So, you know, those votes, even within Republican circles, just weren't there for him.
Mm-hmm. I know you had an opportunity to talk, at least during the victory time at his headquarters on Tuesday night. And what did Frank Mervan tell you and about what he is anticipating to do when he goes to Washington to try to continue the success that Pete Visclosky has had?
Yeah, one of the things he talked about was how Congressman Visclosky has been a champion for working men and women, which is something Mervan said he has tried to do as North Township trustee for the past 15 years. He also said his priorities are going to include helping move the country through COVID-19, ensuring affordable health care access to mental health services, making sure there's good jobs and infrastructure still in Northwest Indiana, which has always been a Visclosky goal with his support for the steel industry and for transportation, the South Shore Line. Mm-hmm. And Mervan said he's also going to go to Washington and try and promote economic development here in Northwest Indiana.
I know you mentioned, certainly in our conversation that we had with Frank, about the work that's going to have to be done when he gets to Washington. It's not going to be an easy atmosphere to live in. He's had much better luck back here in Northwest Indiana, to be sure, with more people who will cooperate with him and support him, will he?
Yeah, I mean, he is going into what looks like will be a Democratic-controlled House, so he is in the majority, which is a plus. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have the same kind of seniority as Pete Visclosky built up over 36 years representing the region. So, you know, just like any freshman in high school or freshman in college, Congressman Mervan's going to have to learn his way in Congress. You know, he's worked as an executive, as a township executive for 15 years. So it's a little bit different being in the legislative branch where you have to work across party lines and try to build coalitions within your own caucus. And he thinks he's ready to do that, and, you know, for the good of the region, let's hope he succeeds.
Mm-hmm. And I know in your story you mentioned as well, too, about the fact that the congressman-elect has had some great support, some good endorsements, including from the soon-to-be-now predecessor. Tell us how Frank Mervan has been able to parlay all of the success he's had, not only with the endorsements that he's gotten from Pete Visclosky, but the other support back home here.
Yeah, that actually proved to be huge in the primary election. If you remember, there were 14 Democrats running for this this rare open seat after Congressman Visclosky said he was going to retire. And right before COVID struck, Congressman Visclosky and the United Steelworkers got together and had a joint event where they both endorsed Mervan, and that really helped put Mervan over the top in the primary because you know, there's a lot of steel workers, obviously, in Northwest Indiana, and a lot of people respect Congressman Visgoski. So when people were making their decisions in the primary election, that influenced those choices and helped Mervan win the primary. And then, obviously, they continued to support him in the general election. You know, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing a Mervan sign for the last few weeks, and a lot of them had a steelworkers logo on it, too. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you, Dan, since you cover the politics from Northwest Indiana, especially at the State House, and with this past election, we've had a number of members of the Indiana House and Indiana Senate that have won re-election, a few new people, but we notice that there's going to be a lot that will probably come up here in this upcoming session that maybe or well, maybe not be decided because we have incumbents coming back. Do you see any problems that Northwest Indiana may face in being able to get some votes out of lawmakers in Indianapolis because of the election just passed?
I don't. I think it'll actually be interesting, let's say, mm-hmm. Maybe even to Northwest Indiana's advantage. The Republican Party controls both chambers of the Indiana General Assembly. We have a Republican governor. And it looks like two former Republican state representatives, Julie Althoff and Hale Slager, have defeated the current Democratic incumbents who took their seats in 2018. So they kind of grabbed their seats right back in the mm-hmm. presidential election year. You know, having worked at the State House for a number of years, a lot of decisions get made within the Republican caucus room. They're not finalized until the full House votes on it. But, you know, looking ahead to this next legislative session, there's going to be probably 70 or more Republicans in the 100-member House. And you want to have your people in that room when decisions are being made. And having Hal Slager and Julie Althoff in those rooms from Lake County, Mike Aylesworth as well, his district includes part of Lake County. That's going to go a long way toward helping Northwest Indiana, you know, get things out of state government.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the legislature deals with the issues, of course, as they begin their work in January and with some people returning in seats that they had before. I mean, may see some action that will please some folks in Northwest Indiana, to be sure. And we were pleased that you were able to be with us today and talk about the stories. We appreciate it, Dan.
Happy to do it.
Dan Carton is the chief political reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. The Gary Community School Corporation is now looking forward to the next 8 years of financial assistance from voters as well as taxpayers in the city of Gary. The referendum that the GCSC has worked hard to publicize, to explain to voters in Gary has gone through, and to tell us more about the end result of the passage of the referendum, we have Gary Community School Corporation Manager Dr. Paige McNulty with us. And Dr. McNulty, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, to let people know, if they hadn't seen the official figures, which of course posted at least as with the unofficial results, we should say, that are posted on the Lake County Public Election Results report that's out there, 60.2% of Gary residents who voted said yes to the referendum question, 39.7% said no. If you will first, tell us what the question's all about, what the voters were asked to either approve or disapprove.
Yeah, well, first I want to thank the citizens and the community of Gary for having faith in our schools and our school district and for recognizing and seeing the progress that we're making and wanting to invest in their school district as they see that we have a new beginning and some hope for revitalizing our schools. So I want to thank everybody who helped us, and I want to thank the community for voting yes on the referendum. I think it's a huge, huge win for the not only for the school district, but for the community itself.
Now, what was the reaction there with in-house, so to speak, when the figures finally became more at least apparent that you had victory on your hands?
Oh, everybody is just beyond excited, all the way from, you know, the students, the staff, the everybody who worked on the PAC, the political action campaign. There's just been an outpouring of support, again, from community members, faith-based leaders, you know, the community lawmakers, city council, teachers union. Everybody is just thrilled. So everybody's got a little pep in their step moving forward here.
Now, we take a moment, if you will, and kind of give us a quick Cliff Notes look at what the referendum is all about, because now following up on the passage of the referendum is going to be a lot of work to get the oversight process started.
Yeah, so well, we won't start collecting the money from the passage of the referendum until the end of June, early July. So it gives us a little bit of time to get things prepared here. But as I've said all along, we wanted to make sure, and I had made the commitment to have an oversight committee because there had been so much mistrust from past issues. And so I wanted to make sure that I was being very transparent with where the money was going, how it was going to be spent, and so that we could report out to this committee on a regular basis as to how progress was being made. So we will have up on our website here within the next couple of days an application process where people can apply. We want people, a cross mix of people from across the city. We don't want this to turn into a political thing. Just a cross mix of people who have an interest in the school and seeing it success. We'll have, you know, well-rounded committee that I will meet with on a regular basis to share with them how the money is being spent and what's moving, what's going to be next on the agenda, so we can have some good conversations about it.
I know that the question is a very, very simple one, but which basically asks for a yes or no answer, because that's what you can provide on the ballot when you go to the, when you went to the polls and punched the right or colored in the right particular blank on the ballot as to whether you approved it or didn't approve it. But the idea just basically centers around the question of approving an increase in taxes for a number of years. That in turn, the taxes, and you explained it very much, I know, in the presentations that you had, not only to the Gary Common Council, but to citizens all over the area. I understand you've made a lot of public appearances during the months here coming up to the referendum vote on November 3rd.
Yes. Yeah, so we certainly, one of the things that I heard loud and clear from the last referendum that they tried to pass and it failed, and it didn't fail by a lot, but what I heard a lot was we just didn't have the information. We didn't know exactly what the money was going to be spent towards, and I didn't want that to be a hindrance on whether people voted yes or no. Certainly, it's everybody's, it was their decision to vote yes or no, but I didn't want them not to have the information. I didn't want that to be the roadblock. So we made a concerted effort to get out into the community and talk at as many venues that would have us and make sure that we had the information out so that they can make a mindful decision.
I know that among the things that were going to be covered here with the funds that have now been approved by voters that will come into the Gary Community School Corporation is the opportunity to not only do the things in the buildings that you'd like to do, to get the classes back up in many cases, but also the return of sports in some of the classrooms, as well, not classrooms, but in some of the schools as well, too. Tell us about how the extracurricular activities as well as the educational activities are going to benefit from this.
Yeah, so we are excited to be able to have some curriculum enhancements that we're definitely going to start on immediately, like some new curriculum that we would like to adopt, some new textbooks, et cetera. We certainly want to work towards having three of our schools become STEM certified so that we can have those added options for our students. We have already started our track, you might have seen. So our track has already been ripped up this week, and asphalt is being laid as actually today as we speak, and then it'll be ready to go in the spring for our so we'll have a home track field, if you will, for our spring sports. And we're going to continue that. For example, the pool at some point here is going to be worked on and fixed, and we're going to continue. We've got a long laundry list of things over the next 5 years that we'll be working on so that our school will be competitive school with our neighboring districts.
One of the things I noted in taking a look at the information ahead of Election Day was, and you've mentioned all of these things, of course, in your public sessions, but you talk about taking care of not only educational needs for young people in the Gary Community School Corporation, but their social and emotional needs as well. Will you kindly explain that and why that seems to be very, very important these days?
Well, I think it's important for a lot of reasons. I mean, we're going, not only is it just a just something that schools need to address today, but it's also, you know, in the middle of COVID, in the pandemic, we've got a lot of kids and families who are suffering and who have are experiencing perhaps depression and anxiety, and adults too, and we need to take care of each other. And so we want to make sure that we have the proper social work services in place and behavioral intervention procedures in place so that we can help our students. I really want to work hard on our suspension and expulsion rates. I don't believe that kicking kids out of school is not always the best avenue. So I'd like to wrap some more services around kids before we get to that point so that we can ensure that they have a good, well-rounded education.
I know one of the important things, of course, is making sure that enough students attend classes in the schools. And you actually, you've had some great improvements that should help along and certainly maybe made a decision in some voters' minds that it's worth having to pay a little extra in property taxes on their home or a business to make sure that the youngsters can stay in school and they get the education they need. The average daily membership or attendance, I guess you could say, it went up for the first time in 10 years?
Yes, it did. We were thrilled. I think that is a huge accomplishment, especially in the middle of this COVID stuff, because all of our kids, as you know, are still home doing virtual learning. And it's been reported across the state that there's, you know, kids who aren't attending school because of this right now. So there's been a decrease across the state at a lot of districts with their ABM. And so for all those reasons, for us to have an increase, although it's not a huge increase, we'll take it because I think that says a lot. I think our parents are having, again, faith in our schools, our teachers, social workers, everyone's reaching out to kids who are needing it. We've done home visits. We're trying our best to partner with our parents and our community so that the kids know that we care about them, we want them in school, and I think all those things are actually making a big difference.
1.2 that was already been brought up here before the election has been the importance for the referendum of not only helping continue the improvement that the Gary Community Schools has made financially, trying to deal with the deficits that they still have, paring them down as much as they can, but it also, I guess, would help as well, too, in the future of the school district to get it out from underneath the state's thumb, so to speak, wouldn't it?
Correct. Yes. So the I kept saying to everybody, the quickest path to get back the school district to the local control is to pass the referendum. So now with the passage of this, we'll have to have a balanced budget for 2 years, and this will certainly get us there. And then the school district can go back to local control. So I'm really excited about that as well for the school. That's what needs to happen.
Now, Dr. McNulty, let me come back again to the Referendum Spending Oversight Committee. You mentioned that the applications, so to speak, are out there. And you mentioned that you want like a wide range of views and opinions and support from community members, and not just the business community, but all the community in the city of Gary. If people are very interested, is there more information that's out there, you say, online that they can find out more?
Certainly. They can go to our website, and there'll be an application. If it's not posted already, it will be posted here, I'd say, within the next 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And they can apply online, or they can download it and bring it in, however they feel comfortable. We'll have those applications up for several weeks. And, again, this is not a voting committee, but certainly a committee that I want to hear from, have input from, and be able to share information back and forth so that we can have a partnership and make some good decisions together moving forward.
Now, how soon are you hoping to have the committee together and ready to get to work here? Certainly before June of next year, because that's when the funds will be available.
Yeah, certainly by June, and I'd like to have it before that because once we get the committee together, for those people who know me within the district, I'm big into teaming, and I think it's important for this group, whomever it ends up being, for us to get to know each other and form a good team environment and do some training as to the parameters of how the team should work together. And so I'd like to do some work with them so that we're ready to go when the money starts arriving.
That's great. Dr. Paige McNulty is the manager of the Gary Community School Corporation, and the school corporation has gotten the support from voters to the point of more than 60% of the voters who cast ballots in the Tuesday election in support of the referendum. And we thank you very much for spending time to go through things, and we hope that there are a lot of applicants that they get the oversight committee all set up here before they get to work next year. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Jill Long Thompson is a former three-term congresswoman from Indiana. She's currently a college professor. In fact, she teaches ethics for the O'Neill and for the Kelly School of Businesses with Indiana University, primarily on the Bloomington campus. She's had a political career that went back to when she was first elected to office in the Valparaiso City Council. And that was 1983. And she, in turn, has, of course, served in the House of Representatives, served under the Bill Clinton administration before. And she's done a number of things. She's also run, she was the first nominated woman for either office of a major political party here in Indiana when she was running for governor. That was back in 2008. And she has most recently written a book, which will be out soon, published by the Indiana University Press, entitled The Character of American Democracy. And Jo Long Thompson, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me ask this, I think, very simple question, but it'll lead into a lot of others. The first question I was thinking of as I was putting together my notes was, does this book, which again is titled The Character of American Democracy, does it require knowing a lot about politics and ethics, or can someone learn them from it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the book probably would have relevance to a broad audience. And if you're someone who hasn't thought a great deal about the role that ethics play in running a democratic government, I think it would provide some insight. But I also think if you have experience, it would clarify and maybe confirm some things. But no, you do not have to have a background in politics. You don't have to be taking a course in political science. I think if you care about our democracy and you care about our country and love the country as I do, I think you might find it to be an interesting read. And I say that not because I'm wanting to sell lots of books for myself. I have directed that all of the royalties go back to Indiana University.
That's good.
I believe very strongly in education, and Indiana University really changed the trajectory of my career. And I want to be able to provide some help for other students as they are coming along many years behind when I was there.
I noted that you begin the book talking a lot about the importance of character, and personal and professional in that particular case. You mentioned about some veterans that you managed to grow up around as a young person, and the importance that they held in, I guess, character. Tell us some thoughts about that.
Well, I think the willingness and the courage that it takes to serve in the military, to literally put your life on the line, to protect our democracy, to protect the values of our country, I think that that says a great deal about a young man or woman's character. And I grew up on a farm in rural Indiana in the 1950s and 60s. And literally everywhere I would go, there were veterans of World War II or of the Korean War. We went to church. Many of the members of our congregation were veterans. My dad is a veteran. Uncles, I have uncles who are veterans. And these my late mother-in-law served in England during World War II. These mm-hmm. were young people who, for the most part, had not traveled very far outside their counties. They grew up on farms. They stayed there and worked hard. And somewhere between the ages of 18 and 20 were drafted or volunteered to serve and went to very faraway places because of their belief. And there was a draft, but because of their belief in what we stand for here. And I just think they epitomize American character.
I know a lot gets mentioned these days about imperfect union, which, of course, is stated in the documents that you can go see if you wish to visit Washington. How is it linked to your book?
We can't expect that in order to have character that someone is perfect. Humans mm-hmm. are not perfect, and we have not been perfect in our history. The fact that we allowed slavery, and I attribute a great deal of that to just ignorance at the time, in addition to a self-serving approach to running the farms, the plantations, and so forth. We are not a perfect nation. You're not going to find a perfect nation. You're not going to find a perfect person. But on balance, we have worked to advance opportunities for minorities and women. And I think the country's loss of Congressman John Lewis, he has, I think he very much epitomizes what American character is.
Mm-hmm.
And he, by working with literally thousands of people over the years, was able to be a part of bringing the country forward. We have a long way to go, but we're striving for perfection, but we know that we will not be perfect. At the same time, we want to make sure that our leaders reflect the values that were incorporated into the U.S. Constitution. And not only is it important for our leaders to reflect those values of democracy, the values of fairness of process, equality of participation, transparency, individual rights, individual opportunity, it's important that we move those, that we take actions that support those things, recognizing that even when we do our best, we will falter from time to time, but we need to keep moving forward.
We're talking with former Congresswoman Jo Long Thompson. She's also a run for other public office here in Indiana, and she's been involved in federal government as well, too, for a number of years. She's now teaching ethics at Indiana University in Bloomington. And I guess the question I'll ask you is a question you probably get and have to put in your syllabus for the classes when you teach them, is what does it mean to act ethically?
Ethics are not what people often associate them with. Oftentimes, when we think of ethics, we think of morality or religious beliefs or sometimes even feelings. Does something not feel right that we're about to do or that we see someone else doing? But actually, ethics are, I like this definition, well-based standards of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. That prescribe what people ought to do in terms of virtues, duties, and outcomes. And I also like to reference in my classes, and by the way, I'm not teaching this summer and I'm not going to be teaching this fall. I want to clarify that.
Okay.
I am going to be promoting the book this fall. So technically I am not teaching, and since I wrote a book on ethics, I have to be very transparent.
Well,
that's
very fine. You being ethical, that which is fine. That's something to learn. One of the other things I noted too in the book is you referred to decision making with character. Would you briefly explain what that is all about? And we have personal biases. We do. We try our best not to show them or not to let them affect us, but they are there anyway.
They are, and they're based on our own personal experiences and things that we have heard. Basically, they come from having limited experiences. So decision-making with character involves, and I borrow from the late Professor Hosmer from, he taught at the University of Michigan, and he used a sort of a three-pronged approach to making good decisions, where you look at whether or not something you're considering doing is virtuous. Does it reflect the duty that you have to others? In other words, is it principled? And then how does it affect people? And when you make a decision with character, you would identify the situation. What is the dilemma that you're facing? And then what alternatives do you have? And you would evaluate each alternative based on whether it's virtuous, and in a minute I'll talk about virtues,
mm-hmm.
Whether it is principled. And if it's principled, it would be reflective of a duty that you have in the role that you're playing, the role as a parent, the role as a manager, the role as a driver in heavy traffic even. And then you would also evaluate how people would be impacted, what would be the positive and negative impacts. And in public service, in government in particular, the impact on people is very important. Now, regarding virtues, Aristotle was a virtue philosopher, and I'm not a philosopher, but I, many years ago, came across what are called the pillars of character. And these are widely accepted values that exist around the world and in various countries and cultures. And they include trustworthiness, which would include integrity, respect for others, responsibility, taking responsibility for our actions, fairness, And in democracy, fairness of process as well as fairness of outcome, those are both important. Caring, do we have compassion for others? And then the final pillar is citizenship, meaning are we being a good citizen? Not are we formally a citizen of a particular country, but are we, by our actions and our attitudes, reflecting what a good citizen should do? And so trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, care, mm-hmm. and citizenship.
I noticed in the book, too, that you bring up and talk in one of the points in the book about an essay that you happened to have read some time ago from economist Milton Friedman. And I guess, in turn, how it seems to be a part of the study of ethics as it pertains to business. And you would think, certainly in the 21st century, that the two words, ethics and business, don't always go together, or they almost conflict. How do you think that Dr. Friedman had kind of put things together that you thought it was worthy of putting in the book itself?
Well, he wrote the essay. It was back when I was an undergraduate student at Valparaiso University that it was published.
Mm-hmm.
And the essay's title was something like The Social Responsibility of Business is to Generate Profits for Its Owners. That's not the exact title, but that was the point. But in the essay, he made the point that you have this responsibility to run the business well. And to do so that those who invested and entrusted you with the management of the company, that they get a return on their investment. But he also said something along the lines of if society's values are such that it is in the interest of the business to reach out and have the social responsibility in any of a number of ways, then that should be incorporated. And I think that part of his essay was often overlooked, and it was the title that got most of the attention.
Mm-hmm.
I am a firm believer in capitalism, and as you know, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development does research on various economies, and over the last number of decades, capitalism has generated more income per capita multiple times over, actually, other economic forms. Capitalism works, but it has to be fair and regulated. And just as governments are run by people who are not perfect, corporations and small businesses are run by people who are not perfect, because none of us are perfect.
Mm.
And that's why I think that we have to have smart, a smart regulatory system. And we do regulate here in the United States, but oftentimes it's more politically determined than economically or determined from a fairness standpoint. But regulated capitalism is the best way, I believe, to generate the income that's needed to run a successful country. You can't have an infrastructure or strong public education, strong health care, if you don't have an economy generating the resources to fund those things.
Now, I note in the book, and you bring this point up, I guess, even before you get to talking about Dr. Friedman, but it's an interesting point when you're dealing with the subject of trying to lead with character. And you bring up the example, and we're not here to push this particular restaurant chain that has this interesting policy, but you bring up as a good example of leadership with character about how a certain restaurant chain that operates out of the Midwest has a coffee refill policy. And there's an mm-hmm. interesting way that you put that together. Tell us how this all came about and what kind of way it helps maybe teach us a little ethics lesson.
Well, my mother and her cousin
mm-hmm.
are Bonnie and Liz. And they grew up during the Depression, and they go to this restaurant regularly, or they were going to it regularly. They're not now during mm-hmm. the pandemic. And my mother's cousin would always drive, and then my mother would buy lunch. And they would order one cup of coffee for the two of them, and my mother would drink the coffee, but then order a refill because there were free refills at this restaurant. But she ordered the refill not for herself, but for her cousin, and she would very quietly and discreetly walk out of the restaurant with the cup of coffee in a to-go cup, And when they got to the car, she would hand it to her cousin. And they did that because they thought it was wasteful not to take that free cup of coffee, that free refill. And I told them that the refill, by definition, is for the person who ordered the first cup. Not unlike if you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, it's all you can eat, not all you and the rest of the people at your table can eat.
Uh-huh.
And so I believe that it's important to look at what they were doing in the context of trying to be smart money managers. At the same time, the outcome of that is if everybody were to do that, it ends up raising the price of a meal or of coffee for, let's say, half of the people who would go to that restaurant. If they were to order the free refill and give it to someone else, that does increase the cost for that restaurant, and that cost has to be passed on to others. And mm-hmm. so in terms of the impact on others, it is not probably the most character-driven decision you could make, but it also, there's a virtue issue because integrity would dictate that you take the refill for yourself. Now, people argue this with me, and I am willing to accept those arguments, but it's just a simple example of how every day we're confronted with ethics dilemmas, and sometimes they're a little more complex than we think.
I know you close the book out as you begin the book, in a way, with some quotes from the late Senator John Lewis, who we are remembering as a civil rights icon and a very, very responsible lawmaker. The route that he decided to take, rather than just being a protester, that he decided to work the system from within. But he mentions in this in the final quote about the strength of character and the strength of union, and he uses a particular phrase, pushing and pulling together. Will you bring us up to how you feel that's certainly appropriate in these times that we're all facing?
I think that democracy works best when we are willing to acknowledge that we individually don't have all the answers. It is not reasonable for me or anyone to think, I get my own senator, I get my own president, I get my own laws. We have to work together to advance the values and to move forward as a society, as a people. And we need to push and pull together, not expect to have our own way. And the word compromise has a negative connotation for some, but compromise is integral to successful democracy. And while, yes, each of us would like to have our way all the time, we think, for democracy to work, we have to be willing to compromise. And we need leaders who are not divisive in their approach, who are not divisive in their language. We need leaders who will bring people together who have different ideas, different points of view. You know, diversity, the research shows over and over again that when you have diversity in leadership, when you have people who come from different backgrounds, where you have gender diversity and ethnic diversity and racial diversity, that's when you get the best leadership, and that's when organizations perform the best. And I think that Congressman John Lewis was just so brilliant in his understanding of what it takes to make democracy work. And we do need to push and pull together, not expect to have our way and not to divide and conquer. Dividing and conquering for the purpose of conquering and getting your own way makes us weaker as a nation. We need to embrace this concept of pushing and pulling together and compromising and working together toward our common goals and upholding our common values.
Indiana University professor Jill Long Thompson is a former three-term congresswoman from Indiana. She's also been a Democratic Party nominee for a U.S. Senate seat and also a nominee for governor back in 2008. And she has just put out a book, which is being published by the IU Press, entitled The Character of American Democracy. And Professor Thompson, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the book, your thoughts about the issues of character and democracy. And we hope that many people have a chance to pick up the book and learn for themselves yourselves how you feel about this as well.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm honored and enjoyed the interview. Thank you.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. And for this week, I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Our thanks especially to Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana and to Gary Community Schools Corporation Manager Paige McNulty for being with us. And we hope you'll join us as well on Monday.